Where would we be without Tanner? Thank you, Tanner, for... You might remember the story about the warrior that comes up to a holy man, and the warrior says to the holy man, "Hey, I'm the mightiest guy in the world. Ask me to do something mighty." So the holy man says, "Okay, cut the branch off that tree." So the warrior takes out his sword and goes, whoosh, branch falls to the ground. "Ask me to do something else this mighty." So the holy man said, "Okay, and now put the branch back on the tree." They said, "What? You're crazy. Nobody can do that." And the holy man said, "No, you are the crazy one. To think that to be mighty means to cut and wound and destroy. Anybody can do that. A truly mighty person is one who restores and heals and forgives." We see a toxic masculinity being played out today in the war in Ukraine. President Putin is showing his manhood in all the wrong ways. He's destroying cities, he's bombing civilians, bombing maternity hospitals, boarding schools for the blind, children, and people in breadlines. He's nursing envy and resentment over past events that have stunted his power. He's a bully, threatening even to use nuclear weapons. Somehow he needs to intimidate people with weapons just to feel like a man. He shows no moral stature, whereas President Zelensky in Ukraine remains with his people. He's vulnerable, he risks getting killed, and he calls for peace. Last month, you might remember, families of the 2012 Sandy Hook school shootings in Connecticut reached a $73 million settlement with Remington, the gun manufacturer. As the father of six-year-old Dylan Hockley, one of the kids that was killed, said, "Remington used reckless manufacturing tactics that appeal to at-risk and violent-prone young men. They targeted young men who wanted to appear more intimidating, more powerful, and more masculine through the use of their AR-15 rifles." Remington's ad said, "Report your friend for not being a man because they don't own a Remington." Why do so many American men need a gun to feel like a man? There's a real confusion about what it means to be a real man. Real men try to save the planet. Real men are compassionate. They care. They stand up for injustice. They're not homophobic. They wage peace, not war. They cherish their children and grandchildren and spouses and Mother Earth. They are mighty men who know how to restore and heal and forgive. Jesus tells us the story today of the merciful father and the two lost sons. He shows us what a real man is. The father breaks all customs of respectable parenthood just to get his two sons back. That's the whole focus of the story. He's got to get his two wayward sons back. So it starts with the younger son who says, "Father, give me my share of inheritance. Give me." Everything bad starts with those two words, "give me." Give me, give me, give me. Judas said to the priests, "How much will you give me if I hand Jesus over?" Who cares about Jesus? How much will you give me? Incredibly, the father gives it to him. Now, a normal father back then would say, "Get lost. Stay and work on the fields. You get your inheritance when I die." But this gives a clue that he is an unconventional father, and he doesn't play by the rules. He gives his son the money, knowing that the son is going to make a mess. Did you ever get taken advantage of? Anybody ever cheat you? Did you ever get scammed? Con artists often try to cheat members of Spiritus Christi. They do it all the time. They know we're a compassionate community, and they take advantage. So many times, they'll send out false emails that they made up to parishioners saying, for example, "This is Reverend Myra. We ran out of gift cards to give to people at the door. Could you please send immediately $500 so I can buy some more gift cards?" And people unwittingly have sent these scammers $500 or more. It's a terrible feeling when you've been taken advantage of. 6 years ago, psychologist Maria Konovkova wrote a book on professional con artists. Now, you might expect her main tip to be this: always be on guard. But no, the leading expert on frauds and scamming comes to this conclusion: accept the fact that you will occasionally be cheated. That's a small price for the luxury of a lifetime of trusting people. Most people are good. Most people can be trusted. We need to keep trusting people even if we get scammed. So the merciful father gives the prodigal son the money, even though he knows he's going to be taken advantage of. The father challenges the patriarchy of his day and of today. Like this father, God refuses to own us. God refuses to demand submission or to punish our rebellion. Rather, this God respects freedom, cries when we make mistakes, and waits and waits and waits until we come back home. We're told the son set off for a distant country, a faraway place, a foreign land. We've all been there, a place where we have no business being, a place where we've gotten in trouble and messed up. I've done it, you've done it. Predictably, the son messes up his life. He wastes all his money, and when his money is gone, his friends are gone too. He ends up a Jew working for a Gentile, feeding the Gentile's pigs. He disgraced himself and his family in the process. For a Jew, that's the lowest of the low to end up in a pig pen. Then to make matters worse, a famine breaks out. We can relate to that. A COVID breaks out. The pandemic comes. Things are already bad. They're already stressful for people. And now the COVID adds anxiety and depression and isolation to what was already there. Delina Harper was our speaker last night at the prison outreach gala. Many of you were there. She recently wrote a book called God's Teardrop, My Journey of Healing from Addiction and Prostitution. She wrote, "My addiction consumed me. I numbed myself with drugs. I didn't want to feel that I didn't belong. I didn't want to feel the hatred I had for myself or feel the shame and guilt of using drugs and prostituting." The prodigal son hit bottom, and he came to his senses. Delina hit bottom too. She wrote, "I was broken mentally and spiritually. I was desperate, beaten down by the streets and the drugs. The gift of desperation helped me to accept help. I came to Jennifer House in 2006. People believed in me before I could believe in myself. I was finally home." And I think you know that Delina eventually became the director of Jennifer House. Like Delina, the prodigal son came to his senses and headed home. But in the meantime, his father was deathly worried, so worried about him. As you know, there are more than 3 million Ukrainian refugees today, and 2 million of those 3 million have gone from east to west. They've taken the train into Poland. But while these Ukrainians are going from east to west, there's another group of Ukrainians that are going from west to east. They're coming back into Ukraine, back into the line of fire. At least 260,000 Ukrainians are returning to their homeland, back into the line of fire. Why? Most men are coming back on the trains to defend their homeland, but one out of five is a woman, mostly mothers, coming back to protect their children. They were away working outside the country, and when the war broke out, now they're coming back into the line of fire to protect their children. One woman said, "I called my son and I told him, 'Honey, don't worry, I'm coming.' Then 6 days passed. She couldn't get through to him. There was no signal whatsoever. 'I can't sleep,' she said. 'I have to keep trying to call him. I keep hoping the message will go through.' What mother wouldn't do that?" Like the father of the prodigal son, looking out the window, hoping each moment he would connect with his son, what parent wouldn't do that? Maybe some of you are parents who have temporarily lost your child at the Lilac Festival or some amusement park. Or maybe they were out all night and you were worried sick. Or they didn't come home on the school bus. You felt panic and fear and desperation. Years ago, Lauren Rosetta Fry, our youth leader, went to Washington, D.C. over Thanksgiving. While she was gone, her apartment on Park Avenue was broken into and ransacked. When Lauren returned, she found her computer gone and her jewelry was stolen. But worse, the window was left open and her beloved cat had gone out. The next day, she prayed to St. Anthony. She searched the whole neighborhood of Park Avenue. And then, coming toward her in the distance, was a homeless man carrying something. He was asking everybody if they were the owner of the cat. And Lauren just lost it. She just ran toward the guy, crying, overwhelmed. She hugged the guy and gave him a wad of money. Finally, the young son does appear down the road. And the father, whose heart has been breaking, saw him in the distance. And like Lauren, he ran out to meet him. He ran out to meet him. It's the only time in the Bible where God runs. Running to greet the lost child. Or just like the Ukrainian mothers, rushing to reconnect with their children. And just like Lauren, the father does something unpatriarchal. He hugs and kisses his son. He puts a ring on his finger, clothes on his back, sandals on his feet, and throws a party. The father doesn't cut and wound and destroy. Instead, he restores and heals and forgives. He shows what a mighty man can really be. Last year, I was in a store, and I got talking to an employee at the store. I asked her if she had a family, and she said, "I was married until 16 years ago when a drunk driver killed my husband coming out of a church on Joseph Avenue. I had 3 kids at the time, all in high school, and all of a sudden, I was a single parent. I was devastated. I was consumed in hatred. For 3 years, I hated this man. And then I heard that the drunk driver was serving a sentence in Groveland Prison. I decided to visit. The guards asked, 'Are you family or friends?' I said, 'Neither.' But they let me in. I met the man, the prisoner, and I said to him, 'You killed my husband, and I came here to forgive you.' He dropped to the floor, and for 15 minutes, he cried and cried and cried. He said, 'I never thought anybody would ever forgive me. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I've been here just feeling terrible about what I did.' The woman said, 'I left prison with the weight of the world lifted off my shoulders. For the first time, I could return to my life.' Forgiveness always rewards the person who does the forgiving more than the person forgiven. Putting down the burden of unforgiveness is always a benefit to the person who forgives. Jesus ends the story by talking about the older brother. It's really a story of two brothers. The elder son hears about the party that's being thrown, and he's angry, and he's resentful. You know, they say that all you need to start a new AA group is a resentment and a coffee pot. The father goes out to find this resentful son, the way he went out to find his younger son. And then the older son lays bare his bitterness. "All my life, I've never disobeyed your rules." Great. He learns to keep the rules, but he never learned to love. All he can do is demand his rights and run down his brother. And this is the tragedy of the older son. He never left the house, but his heart was far away from home. He knows how to obey the rules, but he is judgmental of others. Ernest Campbell, the former pastor of Riverside Church in New York City, said, "The biggest problem with American Christianity is that we have a loving father gospel and an elder brother church." We have a loving father gospel and an elder brother church. We divide ourselves between us and them, the good guys and the bad guys. We preach a loving gospel, but are judgmental of people who are transgender, who've had abortions, who are on welfare, who are immigrants. Like the elder brother, we don't think God's mercy should extend to certain people that we think are unworthy. Again, notice the father. This is a story about the merciful father. He doesn't berate the elder son. He doesn't punish him. He doesn't shout at him. He doesn't give him orders. He doesn't cut and wound and destroy. Instead, he tries to persuade him to drop his resentment and come to the party. He restores and heals and forgives. Now, to be honest, there's a younger son and an elder son in all of us. Part of us has sown wild oats, and we know how to make a mess of our lives. And then there's the other part who is angry and resentful and judgmental of others. But what remains constant is God's love and forgiveness, whether we go away or whether we stay home. So the father seeks out two lost sons. God's family is not complete until everyone has a place at the banquet.